Daniel Vacanti, you've given a number of experience reports at the Agile Conference as well as sessions, but your specialty, your expertise, is in really getting people to understand flow. And why don't you say a little bit about the experience report that you gave this year?
It really came down to an evolution of the company I was working with, Ultimate Software, and their experience with various approaches to Agile, you know, and over the years some have worked and some haven't worked, and how we recently, within the past 2 or 3 years, they've had a re-interest in these flow principles. And the case study was all about how a refocus on these flow principles finally kind of put them over that hump in terms of the improved productivity, the improved predictability, the improved whatever that they were looking for.
So for those of our listeners who aren't really familiar with flow, we have story points and velocity. Yeah. Flow is like the rate of something going in. You explained it in your...
I don't know that I explained it very well, but because it is one of these ethereal things, right? I don't know. But to me, at its most fundamental, flow is really just the movement of value through a value stream or a workflow or mm-hmm. through a process, essentially. And the reason just understanding that is if we understand that we are trying to deliver value for our customers and we understand that this value has to move through a process, then understanding the factors that affect how that value moves through the process is among the biggest levers that we can pull in terms of, you know, getting that better efficiency, getting that better predictability, getting that...
And so having too much work in process is the death of flow.
That's
right?
One of the things, yeah. I mean, if you want to value moving through your system to stop, you know, then just take on too much work in progress. That's probably the worst thing that you can do. Exactly right.
And so it's interesting that people don't realize just having a little too much in progress can just like really have a dramatic decrease in flow.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, we in the process community, if you will, I was going to say agile, but really it's just all process.
Yeah.
In general, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on things like planning and estimation and things like that to accommodate the fact that our process is unpredictable, that our process is undeterministic and all of that. And my hypothesis is really instead of investing all of that energy in planning and estimation, you really should invest in understanding the principles of flow, because that's going to give you all of those things that you're looking for.
So in your talk, you showed this curve, right?
Yep.
This happy curve of where if you're at the top and your peak, things are flowing through, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
But then there's this, and you're saying you don't really care exactly where they're on, but when things are not doing well, you're assuming that they're at the other end of the curve where they're just... things are not, if they did anything but eliminate, you know, simple things like eliminating work, they would move back up into increased flow.
Absolutely.
And it's like, so have you, you know, working with clients, how fast do these things turn around when you, in general?
If they are serious about it, I mean, they turn around really quickly, like ridiculously quickly. You know, if you're serious about things like limiting work in progress, if you're serious about, you know, not starting something until you finish. So
right, this discipline.
Yeah.
If
you're serious about that, then you can have a remarkable fast turnaround. And that's not to say, I mean, you know, it's the adage that, you know, all things work and all things don't work. I mean, I think you can have similarly dramatic effects. Say if you're in a waterfall scenario and you move to Scrum, right? If you're very serious about implementing Scrum principles, you will have dramatic improvement effects. Just like I think if you're very serious about implementing flow principles, you will have a serious increase over say what Scrum can get you.
And but it can be quickly. It's not like you have to be. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, it's. I mean, depending on the context, it's a matter of weeks, really. Yeah.
Yeah, which is like, so why don't more people get interested in this? They're looking at velocity and burn down charts and things like that. And
I just think that's what we've been talking about. That's what we've been trained to do, because I think it does come down to that discipline. So because while you can see those results very quickly in a matter of weeks, to really have institutionalized these ideas takes more like months or years. You know,
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
like I'm sure if you were to talk to people from Toyota who really understand lean, you know, they've been doing lean for what, 60, 70 years, and I guarantee they would say we haven't mastered it yet. You know. So it's about having that discipline for the long term, you know, seeing the results very quickly, but having that discipline over the long term.
Well, so I'm going to ask you this question because it strikes me as, well, do I have to, like, struggle before I get good at flow?
I don't think so. I don't think you have to struggle. I mean, I think you will make mistakes. I think people will make mistakes. And I think it's getting that fast feedback in terms of what has worked and what hasn't worked. It's one of the things that I say about in my Kanban training classes is mm-hmm. all of this, you know, all of these lean principles, these flow principles, these Kanban principles are really, they're all about getting you to ask the right questions sooner. They rarely are going to give you the answers, but they'll prompt the question you should be asking. And you know, it's going to be up to the team to decide what that right answer is. Sometimes your answer will be right, sometimes it'll be wrong, but you'll get that fast feedback to know whether it worked the way that we thought it did.
So, you know, given, you know, you have this analogy of, like, traffic, right? Mm-hmm. Just, like, adding just a little bit more work and you hit this tipping point. I would think that, and I'm not trying to beat down Scrum or anything, but the fact that we estimate a backlog of work that we think we can do and we put that into our cycle of delivery, you know, if we're doing a sprint, mm-hmm. whatever that duration is, how do we know that we're not over capacity with that? Because, So, I mean, you might say a little bit about prediction.
Yeah. The problem really is that they don't pay attention to those flow principles within the sprint. So it's perfectly okay to have, say, 20 stories in your sprint backlog. But the worst strategy is to start all 20 of those right at the beginning of the sprint, right? That's the absolute worst strategy, right? The better strategy is to say, okay, at the beginning of the sprint, we're only going to pull in however many we think we have capacity to do, and we're going to finish those. And when we finish those, we'll pull in the next ones, right? And have
and however your team structure is, whether you're pairing or whatever you're doing, yeah.
Right. That's probably the single biggest thing that I think Scrum teams could do to get better in terms of managing flow within the sprint.
And then though, of course, there's the, you know, what you also talked about is prediction.
Right.
And it's not just based on yesterday's weather.
Correct.
So once you start measuring flow, then you can do things with simulations, which are predictions, not estimates.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's more about you know forecasting and
yes.
And estimating without doing estimation. Right. I mean, it's all about using historical data to run simulations or to run forecasts.
So it seems like yesterday's weather is just a single point in time, which
Absolutely.
Is the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, how long does it take to make these predictions using reasonable?
Yeah. Yet again, I mean, it's you need a lot less data than you might think that you do. Once you start collecting the data in the way that in some of the ways I talk about, we're talking, you know, on the order of you probably have a pretty good idea after 11 or 12 data points. Certainly after about 20 or so, you're in pretty good shape. So
6 months in or 3 or 4 months in, if you're doing 2 week sprints, you might have enough. If you were doing Scrum to do that.
And you might even have enough potentially after one sprint, you know, depending on if we're doing it at the user story and you're getting 20 stories done for a sprint.
Okay, yeah, right? What granularity you're
exactly.
the work that's flowing through.
And that's an interesting point, if I may. I mean, the things that I talk about with flow work at all levels. I mean, you know, we could be talking at the user story level, we could be talking about the epic level, we could be talking about the feature or project level. I mean, these apply no matter what level or granularity, as you said, that we're talking about.
Well, so I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that. There is also the issue when I'm building software of dependencies between
mm-hmm.
things.
Yeah.
And so are you totally ignoring that and just dealing with flow? And no, how do you deal with dependencies?
I don't think so. Because dependencies are probably one of those things that really negatively impact flow, right? If I pick up a piece of work and I get it partway through the process, and it gets blocked because of some external dependency, I can no longer work on this thing. Well, by definition, flow has stopped at that point, right? And so
then I have to analyze root causes for
exactly,
why.
Exactly.
Okay.
Why did that dependency happen? I mean, are there things that I can do to eliminate that dependency? Are there things that I can do to mitigate the impact when that thing does happen, right?
Because dependencies exist in complex systems.
Yeah. They're going to happen, right? It's just. You know, visualizing it, gathering the data around, you know, when those blockages happen, when those dependencies happen, and again, ask the question about, you know, what can we do to improve this situation?
So you're not saying remove all dependencies, but
No.
so no one's going to get to that perfect, predictable flow, right? I mean,
I don't even know what that looks like. Yeah, to be honest,
no,
yeah,
but I mean,
but
you're
you'd
showing these diagrams where basically how close were we to our goal, our target,
Yeah.
and that's not really the goal, is
Nope.
it?
Nope. No. Yeah. No. It's yeah. It's never going to be exact. It's more about, and this is the last talk that I did was talking about taking a more probabilistic approach. It's not about getting it exactly right. It's getting it, what's within a reasonable confidence level, right? How much confidence do we really need in order to make this forecast for us to consider ourselves, successful? Because I'm never going to be right 100% of the time. Do I need to be right 95% of the time? Do I need to be right 85% of the time? I mean, because
Might
depending
depend
on
on your market. Yeah.
exactly, because I mean, depending on whatever that is going to change your approach to how you deal with some of these problems.
So just one final question about this, because this is kind of an interesting thought that occurs to me. It seems like engineering would be much more receptive to these kind of ideas than us fuzzy IT, enterprisey, nebulous software projects.
Yeah.
So, but have you worked with clients that are dealing with those complex, nebulous software things, and this works as well?
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, anything that has workflow, you can apply this stuff to,
Yes,
right? I mean, yeah.
but engineering, we feel like, well, we can measure, we can
Yeah.
predict,
Yeah.
we're better at that.
It's yeah. I mean, it's it really honestly, it really comes down to, and I don't know if this is answering your question or not,
Yeah.
but if you can. Because remember, I talked about flow being the movement of value through through our process. If you can measure the point, or sorry, take a timestamp at a point at which you consider something to have started, and take a timestamp at a point at which you consider something to have finished, right? Just maybe ignoring what happens in between those points right now. If you really only have those two data points, then you can apply everything that I'm talking about to that process.
So I guess the bottom line is more people should be doing this. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many industries that use this. I mean, we talk about it for traffic control. We talk about it for managing the flow of passengers in an airport, right? TSA uses principles of flow, not very well, but they use them. I mean, Starbucks uses these things. I mean, that's the curse. Once you see flow, you see it everywhere, and then
You start wondering why people aren't worrying about it
yeah,
more. Yeah.
exactly,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. Well, actually, at the conference this year, what did you think about the flow at the conference?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of getting around to the rooms and things like that, I didn't necessarily notice a problem. I mean, it's pretty interesting how quickly the rooms themselves filled up, though.
Right. And they did stop. They didn't add more people or work into the system when so they kind of used some flow principles there.
So, I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember those sessions filling up so quickly in previous years. So
No,
that would.
people were lining up, waiting to
Yeah.
go. I mean, I saw them do that.
Yeah, so
So,
that suggests there was some misunderstanding of the balance between capacity and demand there, So again, there would be some interesting questions, I think, to ask about why that happened.
just like more work can show up than
Yeah.
you might expect. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if you've talked to Troy McGinnis, but I'm sure there's a whole bunch of data we could probably collect around that, around, the interest that people showed versus how many people actually showed up, and could we use that data to make meaningful forecasts about how we do capacity planning for the next conference? I'm
Yeah,
sure. I'm sure there
and on
is.
that note, yeah, I'd like to say thanks a lot for sharing. I think that your contribution, where you give sessions and you actually really present empirical data with clients and show this, is really pretty awesome. I mean, it's great.
Well,
So
thank you
thanks
very
a
much
lot.
for saying that.